Would the House please come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Madam Clerk.
25 members present.
We have a quorum. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representatives Osterman, Bundy, Jewell, Kapsner, and Cookish have previously been excused from the call of the House. The
record will so reflect. We have leading the invocation this morning, Pastor Richard Green of the Glacier Valley Church of God. Would members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Father, we give thanks to you. Thank you for the safe return of the war prisoners, for blessing us with prosperity, for life and health, for family and friends, for the continual supply of your grace, and for meeting our needs. Thank you for the people who are involved in public service who minister to us for good. We worship you today not only with the sacrifice of praise from our voices, but also for the sacrificial giving of ourselves in service to others. Now we ask you for guidance and direction. We seek your counsel and wisdom, and we accept your gifts of grace and mercy that we might have all sufficiency in all things to abound in every good work to the praise of your glory. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Pastor. Representative Williams, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 105th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal is certified to the chief clerk be approved.
Without objection, the journal is certified. Are there guests this morning for introduction? Looks like a whole bunch of little guests over there from someplace. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm doing a favor for my friend from Angoon, since he's not here, and I'm introducing a class that came down. There's fourth and fifth graders from Haines Elementary School. And I hope I don't butcher some of these names as I read them off. The students are Russ Bell, Scott Clay, Cara Cook, Will Eagle, Zuri Fish, Derek Hoffman, Alec Gerlight, is that right? Mariah Morris, Caitlin O'Donnell, Miranda Phillips, Ronnie Sloper, Chancey Sturgeon, Amanda Winchick, and the teachers, Janice Hansen, chaperones, Barbara Sturgeon, Miss Kathleen Clay, Mr. Howard Hoffman, and Mr. Randy Sloper. Could you please help us?
Welcome. Any other guests for introduction this morning? Seeing none. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
A message dated May 3rd stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 57 Finance, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 57 Judiciary. And a message dated May 3rd stating the Senate has failed to concur in the House amendments to CS for Senate Bill 33 Finance, namely House CS for Senate Bill 33 Finance, amended House relating to contracts for the performance of certain state functions, and respectfully request the House to recede from its amendments. In the event the House does not recede, the President appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House: Senator Halford, Chair, Senator Pierce, and Senator Elton.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House recede from its adoption of the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 33, Finance, amended House, thus adopting the Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 33, Finance, and recommend that the members vote no.
Are we ready for the question? The question being, shall the House recede from their amendments to House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for SB 33, Finance, amended House, thus adopting Committee Substitute for SB 33, Finance. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. McCadry? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Now, would any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
3 yeas, 29 nays.
And so the House has not receded from their amendments to HCS for CS for SB 33, Finance, amended House, and I would therefore appoint the following members to the conference committee: Representatives Cowdery, Hogan, and Bryce.
And a message dated May 3rd stating the Senate has passed the following. It's transmitted for consideration. CS for Senate Bill 45, Finance, amended by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled an act providing that a person who grants certain conservation easements to the state or municipality that provide public access for recreational purposes and the guarantee of the easement are immune from tort liability other than gross negligence or reckless or intentional misconduct for damages to a person who uses the easement under certain conditions relating to the vacation by the state or a municipality of rights of way acquired by the state under former 43 U.S.C. 932 and providing for an effective date.
Will be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. Could I briefly go down to special orders just for a minute?
Without objection, we're under special orders.
Yes, sir. On behalf of the Speaker of the House and the President of the other body, I wonder if I can quote from a resolution offered today.
Without objection.
Yes, sir. It's on behalf of the Minority Leader. And it's titled, Requesting the United States Board on Geographic Names, Consider Changing the Name of Portland Island to Berkowitz Island. Whereas on Saturday, May 2nd, 1998, at approximately 6 p.m., a skiff capsized just off Portland Island, located at latitude and minutes, and et cetera. But whereas the three passengers on the skiff perched atop the hull until it floated close enough so that they could swim to the shore of Portland Island, whereas these three men were fortunate enough to discover an abandoned campfire that they could resuscitate, whereas on Sunday, May 3rd, at approximately 4 a.m., the three hardy souls were rescued by the venerable United States Coast Guard, and whereas one of these cold, wet individuals was then and remains now a member of the Alaska House of Representatives, be it resolved, Mr. Speaker, that the Alaska State Legislature finds that fishing with Alaska State Representative Ethan Berkowitz is a hazardous endeavor, and be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature finds that Alaska State Representative Ethan Berkowitz has successfully disproved that childhood taunt that he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature finds that Alaska State Representative Ethan Berkowitz could tell a much better story if he had retained the fish that he claims to have caught. And be it further resolved, Mr. Speaker, that the Alaska State Legislature finds that Alaska State Representative Ethan Berkowitz is one lucky fellow. And be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature, notwithstanding Alaska State Representative Ethan Berkowitz's irascible nature, finds that we are happy that he made it home safely. And finally, Mr. Speaker, be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature respectfully requests the United States Board on Geographic Names consider changing the name of Portland Island to Berkowitz Island. And with your permission, Mr. Speaker, we have a quick tune to honor our minority leader, Stan Sattler, on Gilligan's Island. Thank you, Mrs. Speaker.
Representative Foster, you bet. Moving away from special orders, as we must, returning.
I have no communications, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Finance Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 5, extend Dalton Highway to Arctic Ocean. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 5, Transportation, with the same title, recommending due pass Terrio, Mulder, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Williams, and Foster. No recommendation, Davis. The report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. House Concurrent Resolution 5 has no further referral. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 23, Community Development Fund, PFD Budget Reserve, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 23, CNRA, with the same title, attaches the fiscal note and a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Morgan and Murkowski, no recommendation Dyson, Harrison, Howcrow. The report was signed by Howcrow co-chair. House Joint Resolution 23 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 212, Unlawful Trade Practices Antitrust, recommending do pass Murkowski and Cott, do not pass Krutula, no recommendation Croft, Green, and Rokeberg. A zero fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by Cott Chair. House Bill 212 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 214, Prison Litigation, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 214, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Terrio, Mulder, Coring, Grusendorf, Moses, Williams, Foster, do not pass Davies, no recommendation Davis. The report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. House Bill 214 has no further referral. The Community Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 215, Appropriation Renters Equivalency Rebate Program, recommending do pass Dyson, Morgan, Murkowski, no recommendation Harrison, Howcrow. The report was signed by Howcrow co-chair. House Bill 215 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 217, Fishery Cooperative Contracts, attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass Terrio, Mulder, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Williams, and Foster, no recommendation Coring. The report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. House Bill 217 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 88, Finance, Dietitians and Nutritionists, recommending do pass Sanders, Harris, Howcrow, Sisna, Murkowski, and Rokeberg. No recommendation, Bryce. The report was signed by Rokeberg Chair. CSSB 88-10 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
The Special Committee on Fisheries has reviewed the qualifications of Dan K. Coffey to the Board of Fisheries. The report was signed by Representative Hudson Chair, Representatives Whitaker, Morgan, Harris, and Smalley. The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 146, Finance Amended Commercial Fishing License Fisherman's Fund, recommending do pass Whitaker and Hudson, no recommendation Morgan and Harris, amend Smalley. The report was signed by Hudson Chair, CSSB 146, Finn M., as a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing or special committee reports.
Introductions of resolutions or citations.
Citation honoring Wells M. Stevenson by Representative Dyson and Cott and Senators Halford and Phillips. Honoring Callan Chiluk by Representative Kapsner. Honoring Douglas Doug Keel by Representative Roekberg and Senator Pierce. Honoring Catherine Peter, 1999 UAF honorary degree recipient by Senator Lincoln and Representative Morgan. In memoriam Myron A. Stevens by Representative Masick. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills for introduction?
House Bill 219 by the House Judiciary Committee by request entitled An Act Relating to the Rule Against Perpetuities, Non-Vested Property Interests, and Power of Appointment and Providing for an Effective Date.
It will be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 220 by the House Judiciary Committee by request entitled An Act Relating to the Amendment and Revocation of Spouses, Community Property Agreements, and Community Property Trusts and Providing for an Effective Date.
Also to the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 221 by the House Judiciary Committee by request entitled An Act Relating to a Trustee's Duties to Inform and Account to Beneficiaries Relating to the Revocation, Modification, Termination, Reformation, Construction, and Trustees of Trust and Relating to Transfer Restrictions and Trust.
And a hat trick for the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Bill 110 by Representatives Harris and Dyson entitled An Act Relating to the Sale, Offer to Sell, and Labeling of Fluid Milk, Meat, and Meat Products. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 110, Labor and Commerce, with a new title attached to zero fiscal notes, recommending do pass Roekberg, Murkowski, Harris, Cisna, and Halcrow. The report was signed by Roekberg Chair. The Judiciary Committee referral was waived. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent for the Labor and Commerce substitute for House Bill 110. Be adopted with a title change, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute before us. Are there amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 110, Labor and Commerce, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 110, Labor and Commerce, entitled An Act Relating to the Labeling of Milk, Cream, or Any Product or Byproduct of Milk or Cream.
Under discussion, Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I've gotten a little ribbing over this bill a little bit in Labor and Commerce. It's had a few hearings, but we're finally here. This is a product of work between the department my staff and a number of other staffs in the legislature, and what this does is the beginning, I think, of a process we're trying to do to give labeling of BST-free, actually hormone-free milk, and maybe later on meats and other products, but those have been eliminated at this point. And it's really a consumer choice bill. It gives producers of milk the opportunity to label their product if, in fact, it is BST-free or hormone-free that way, and it provides for a penalty for those who may have labeled it on purpose. There's a penalty for that. So really, it's a consumer choice bill. It's very simple, and it doesn't require anybody to do this, but it does give options. So I encourage the members to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harris. Any further discussion? Representative Curtula.
As a farmer's daughter, I just want to say one thing. Got milk.
It's Tuesday, it's not Friday. Representative Brookberg.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to point out to the members that the Labor and Commerce Committee had four hearings on this bill before we could move it out.
Can you top that? Or is there any other discussion of this particular bill? Representative Murkowski.
You asked if we could top it. I learned more about not only milk and milk products. We learned about nymphomaniac ovaries in cows. Labor and Commerce is a committee that you don't want to miss. And this is an utterly wonderful bill, and I would urge your support.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm wondering if I could take the liberty to ask if Mr. Cowdery would like to... No,
I think maybe we better not. Are we perhaps ready for the question? The question being, shall CS for HB 110 Labor and Commerce pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
35 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, committee substitute for HB 110, Labor and Commerce has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's agenda? Representative Harris.
Mr. Speaker, can we move back up to introduction of guests? For just
without objection, introduction of guests.
After that, I'm not sure I want to get up and stand, but sneaking in the Taylor Gallery directly behind me is a constituent of mine from Delta Junction, Kay Kirk.
Welcome. Any other guests for introduction? Returning to the calendar, the next item on the agenda.
Committee substitute for House Bill 13, Labor and Commerce amended by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled an act relating to the characterization of, use of, segregation of, deposit of, interest on, and disbursement of escrow money relating to the recording, filing, and delivery of escrow documents relating to civil penalties for violations of certain escrow provisions by escrow settlement agents relating to the supervision by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development of escrow settlement agents, authorizing the adoption of regulations to implement certain escrow provisions and providing for an effective date. We're in second reading with amendment to amendment number 6 pending.
Thank you.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. If you thought 110 was interesting, wait till you see this. Representative Brookberg.
Yes, sir. I would move to rescind the adoption of my amendment to amendment number 6.
I think you would rather withdraw the amendment.
I would withdraw my amendment
six.
To the amendment number 6.
Thank you. That amendment to the amendment is withdrawn. Representative Sisson.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to withdraw my amendment.
That is amendment number 6, and with permission of the body, amendment number 6 is withdrawn. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House rescind from its actions on amendments 5, 4, 2, and 1, and the adoption of the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 13.
Motion before the body. Shall amendments number 1? Brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? The question before the body. Shall amendments 1, 2, 4, 5, and the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. Brief it is. Would the House please come back to order? The first motion before the body is, shall we rescind from our actions in adopting Amendments 1, 2, 4, and 5 and the Labor and Committee substitute for CS for HB 13? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
34 yeas, 0 nays.
And so we have rescinded from that previous action. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 13 be it, with a new title being adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Privities. Would the House please come back to order? Allowing us to get through this procedural morass, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendments 5421 and the change of the title for Labor and Commerce Committee substitute and recommend that the members vote no.
Question before the body is the adoption, since they are now back in front of us, of amendments 5421 and the adoption of the Labor and Committee substitute. Labor and Commerce, I'm sorry, substitute. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
0 yeas, 30 nays.
And so amendments 1, 2, 4, 5, and the Labor and Committee substitute failed to pass the House. By Jove, we got it. Madam Clerk.
We have House Bill 13 before us. Second reading.
Are there any committee substitutes?
Yes.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Do you want me to read this?
Yes, would you please?
The Finance Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill 13, Labor and Commerce amended, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 13, Finance, with a new title and attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Terrio, Bundy, Foster, Coring, Osterman, and Williams. No recommendation, Mulder, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, and Davis. The report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. I have the two committee substitutes on my desk.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I want to move that unanimous consent to the that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 13 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Finance Committee substitute finally in front of us. Are there amendments?
I have amendments on my desk.
Would the clerk please read the first amendment?
Amendment number 9. By Representative Berkowitz to page 3, following line 5, insert money.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment 9.
There is objection. Brief it is. Would the House please come to order? Is the objection maintained to Amendment number 9?
I would be withdrawing Amendment 9.
Number 9 is withdrawn.
I'm getting into the rescinding mode here.
Are there any other amendments on clerk's desk?
Amendment number 10 by Representative Berkowitz to page 3, line 23.
Representative Berkowitz.
I move Amendment 10.
There is objection. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Essentially, what drew my attention to this particular amendment was the line, a court may not award punitive damages. Well, if the agent steals someone's money, it would seem appropriate that punitive damages be awarded in those instances. And as for the rest of the language here, We spent many, many hours last year debating tort reform. We passed a tort reform package, and that tort reform package would include any torts arising out of disbursement of escrow money. To the extent that this provision would exist, it would merely confuse other provisions that go along with the tort reform, and thereby doing what I know so many members of this body hate doing, which is providing employment for attorneys. So I would hope that the body would take comfort from the tort reform package that passed last year, be mindful that a prohibition against punitive damages would injure people or would protect people who have intentionally stolen money, perhaps, and support this amendment.
Representative Rookberg.
Speaker, this provision was put in here because it was really the wish of the Labor and Commerce Committee to have a civil cause of action rather than have a departmental type penalty. The original bill before the body had a Department of Commerce and Economic Development regulatory regime which in essence enforced the discipline on this statute by a criminal sanction, a misdemeanor. It was the on review, it was felt that a better method of enforcing the statute would be to make it a civil action, with remove the department and any regulatory schemes that might create such things as fiscal notes and other additional burdens on the department, and leave the rare instances where there may be some mishandling to a private cause of action. And that's what we've done. So this whole section here provides the direction as to how you enforce it. And it provides a private cause of action, which is limited in scope to the actual damages, and then prohibits punitive damages because we're trying to put it on the same type of regulatory plane as a Class B misdemeanor. So that was the whole idea, to make it a an enforceable thing and a private cause of action against the mishandling of money, which would basically be a contracts case and not a torts case. So I urge members to reject this amendment.
Representative Bryce.
What came out of the House Labor and Commerce Committee was the need to allow these types of actions to take place in the courts. I agree with that. But we also established certain ceilings or certain parameters by which a person could act in these situations. 5 times the amount of damages. What we got in the finance version is the amount of damages, period. Our, I believe what it is, to recover the monetary damages that equal the value of the money that was lost. So there is no way that if an escrow agent is acting in bad faith or illegally, that he can be punished for improper acts. I think we need to have some type of language, such as what was in the Labor and Commerce version, that would provide the harmed parties a hammer to go after these people who were screwing around with the escrow accounts and everything else. I don't think what we've done in 060 in the finance version allows that to happen.
Thank you, Representative Bryce. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking of the amendment, I mean, that's the problem. They had this right to begin with. When we say we thought we would rather do a court action than a regulatory, essentially that means we're not going to enforce this at all, and we're going to let you go to court and enforce it yourself. That's enough of a it's a policy choice to some extent. It's a punt of our responsibilities in this regard. But adding insult to injury, we then severely limit what they can get out of it. May bring an action to recover monetary damages that equal the value of the money or property lost. You would ordinarily have a right to attorney's fees if someone stole your money. At least under Rule 82, you'd get 20%. You can't get it here. I don't think you can get costs here, the cost of filing the lawsuit and all that. And you certainly don't put any sort of penalty, any sort of deterrent. If I know that I can steal this money, there's no regulatory authority that can protect the person, and if I'm caught, all they can get is the money, why not do it? I mean, you've capped the amount of any harm at the exact amount I stole. Steal 5 times, maybe they catch you 4. And all you got to do is, oh, you caught me, here it is, back. No costs, no attorney's fees. If we mean simply to say, we're not going to do this regulatorily, go to the courts under the general provisions, including tort reform, we just eliminate this and they have that cause of action. We've done the worst of both worlds, said we're not going to enforce it regulatorily and we're going to put some very arbitrary caps on your civil right in the courts. So I'd urge adoption of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Croft. Representative Sisnum?
Mr. Speaker, brief at ease, please.
Brief at ease? Would the House please come back to order? Discussion of Amendment Number 10. Representative Rookberg.
Mr. Chairman, I believe, Mr. Speaker, I believe we'd have to have a title change, and I think that I've been trying to work the magic of the floor here and get a meeting of minds, but apparently it's not working out. My concern is that I'd be happy to make some modifications, but there's been statements on the floor that the really two charges, other interests and things of that nature would not be reachable by somebody who would be aggrieved in this case, and I disagree with that. And I think that there's no court rule change here. There's no other change in that regard. So I think those costs and those issues are not spoken to, and therefore the court rules would be prevailing. And I do believe that by removing the entire section, it takes out the gut of the bill. And therefore, the idea that this should be some type of a minor administrative penalty becomes a full-blown lawsuit. I don't buy that theory either.
Representative Berkowitz, and wrap up.
Very, very quickly, Mr. Speaker. You know, this was set out to be a consumer protection type bill. Consumer protection. That means you protect the consumer. What this paragraph does in its current form is protect the bad actor. That's why I think we ought to remove it.
We're ready for the question. The question before the body is, shall Amendment Number 10 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
23 yeas, 10 nays.
So Amendment Number 10 has passed the House.
Withdraw.
Brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Does the clerk have any further amendments on her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 13 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed for final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and the final time?
CS for House Bill 13 Finance amended, entitled An Act Relating to the Characterization of, Use of, Segregation of, Deposit of, Interest on, and Disbursement of Escrow Money Relating to the Recording, Filing, and delivery of escrow documents, authorizing civil actions for violations of certain escrow requirements and providing for an effective date.
Under discussion. Is there any discussion? Representative Rookberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is intended to protect those consumers and their real estate transactions at a title company to make sure that the monies are good funds in hand prior to the recordation of that transaction. This will protect consumers, will not cost consumers anything. And I think, Mr. Speaker, this is very positive legislation. I ask everybody's yes, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rookberg. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is, shall committee substitute for HB 13 Finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
34 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, committee substitute for HB 13 Finance has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 13 Finance amended be considered the roll call vote of the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's agenda?
CS for Senate Bill 107, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Tourism and Tourism Marketing, Eliminating the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and Providing for an Effective Date. The Finance Committee considered the bill, attached two fiscal notes recommending due pass. Terrio, Mulder, Osterman, no recommendation. Bundy, Coring, Grusendorf, Davis, Foster, amend. Davies, the report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 107 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in. There is objection. This bill will appear on the calendar tomorrow in third reading. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 176, entitled An Act Relating to Attorney Fees and Cost and the Granting of Public Interest Litigant Status in Proceedings Related to Administrative Actions and Inactions and Amending Rules 79 and 80 to Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure and Rule 508, Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure. We're in third reading.
Discussion. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill is, in effect, a level playing field bill in that if we briefly go back in the old English law where the prevailing party was awarded full court costs and attorney's fees, and we got to the U.S. Method that's used in all the lower 48 that says that each party in litigation in the courts will pay their own attorney's fees except in extenuating circumstances. To Alaska, where we have introduced a bill some time ago called the Rule 82, which, depending, and I won't get into that, it's a rather complex methodology of awarding some of the plaintiffs, the prevailing party would be awarded some of their court costs if it's a non-monetary correction, it's some of 30%, and if it's a monetary correction, it's 20%, sliding down depending on the amount of the award. Subsequent to that, the State Supreme Court introduced a doctrine called the public interest litigant. And Mr. Speaker, briefly what this does, it says that if a person or a group brings an action against the administration for a issue or a thing that they have done wrong, and they are the prevailing party, they are awarded 100% of court costs. However, it also gives them an immunity in that if they're considered a public interest litigant and they bring an action and are the loser, they are not bound to pay the loser's court costs. So in effect, what this does has provided a good avenue, I think a good idea, in that if there is a wrong done by the administration, that whatever portion, whatever agency within the administration that has made a wrong, there should be an avenue for court approval, court redress on this. But, Mr. Speaker, that whole concept has been abused, and it's been abused time and time again. Some 17 years, there were maybe 35 of these public interest litigant cases brought. In the last 5 years, Mr. Speaker, there are 35. So that the rate of litigation has gone up considerably. And what generally ends up happening is that any number of environmental or at least those who propose to do as little or nothing to the environment have a cadre of attorneys. They bring litigation, which quite often is nothing more than to bring an issue up or several issues up. Most, if not all, in most cases, are ruled in the defendant or the administration's favor. But it has caused a time delay. And as you know, Mr. Speaker, especially critical in timing is the sea lift for modules going to the North Slope. We saw this this body in a prior session addressed an issue on the North Star issue, development, and it was held up long enough to miss a CLIF, which meant a one-year delay in the development. And Mr. Speaker, if what was ultimately going to happen made a significant difference in what how the operation was developed, I would be the first to champion the cause. But what ends up happening in most cases, it's a litany of issues are brought up, and even one or two of those may be or partially awarded to the public interest litigant. The Supreme Court considers that as a prevailing party, even though the other 9 or 10 were adjudicated against them. So, Mr. Speaker, what this then says is that as a cadre of attorneys, if I bring an action and I get just a fraction of what I bring up as approved, then all of my costs are considered through the public interest litigancy, that I get them all. And what this does is encourage, and I'm not going to say frivolous, because I think the issue that they're talking about is worthy, but what I'm suggesting is that perhaps negotiation could have been done rather than waiting till the final day or the final week to bring up litigation and then continue right up to the Supreme Court, which has actually overturned lower courts and allowed public interest litigant status and subsequently 100% court costs. All this does, then, it doesn't keep anybody from bringing litigation. It just merely says that the public interest litigation against the state would not be allowed.
Thank you. Mr. Majority Leader. Representative Crawford.
Speaker, sauce for the goose. That wasn't my quote. My constituent, Sam McDowell, left a couple of messages for him and actually didn't get to talk to him in person, but talked to some other people who related their conversation, and that was the quote I remember most vividly from it. You may think now, to paraphrase him, that this is all appropriate, the administration is doing all the right things, but this has been used before to correct administrative actions. Where administrative actions are improper, this is the vehicle for doing it. And it's not all environmental groups. A significant amount of those cases are election challenges. You may have unbridled, unlimited confidence that Lieutenant Governor Fran Ulmer will be fair to you in the next election. But if should you have to sue for any irregularities, this is the way you can do it and stand up to the entire weight of the Attorney General's office. And, of course, most of you recognize my constituent's name. Sam McDowell won the subsistence lawsuit that ruled the current subsistence law unconstitutional. It was very difficult to proceed with that lawsuit. It cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. He could not have done it. It could not have been done. We would, I think, without the public interest litigant idea, still have that sitting unchallenged, that statute unchallenged in our statute books, and we would not have the ruling. Some of you may even like that. It's why I started with sauce for the goose. It really is not as clean as environmental groups using this. It is people without a significant financial interest arguing against the government, that the government has hurt them in some respect or is making an error. Community councils use it. I mentioned elections. The prior speaker mentioned a level playing field. If you think you individually challenging the state of Alaska's action, that's a level playing field, it just, in my opinion, is not. You're going to have the entire weight of the Attorney General's office against you. And all this says is, if you're doing it under certain standards, and there are four criteria the court uses, and the most important are, is anyone else going to bring this? I mean, is this an area where really the only one who would do it, the state's not going to challenge itself. There's no other parties really with an interest. Is this the only way really this is going to get questioned? Do they? And the most important criteria, I said there were four, but the two most important were the one I mentioned, and you don't have a significant economic interest. That is, it isn't just you're suing to get money or that you have some economic interest in having this result. You're doing it in the public interest. And only then do you qualify under this this procedure. It's why we see some strange political bedfellows opposing this. I have a fax, and I think most of you do, from Dale Bondurant mentioning the McDowell case and saying essentially what I and my constituents said on this, that it would have been very difficult or impossible to have challenged that law, to have gone against the entire weight of the Attorney General's office and the conventional wisdom at that time that surely this law was constitutional. You just couldn't have lasted that long without this status. It comes into play every time a private individual who doesn't happen to be rich wants to question a state action. And I think this gives a level playing field. It's used by some parties we would like and some parties we don't. But as the state, we ought to just acknowledge it's very difficult to stand up and do this. And when they win, we ought to at least pay the cost for being wrong. When they win, we were wrong on some legal issue. In the subsistence case, we were wrong on the definition of our Constitution, and we ought to tell them then that was appropriate. It shouldn't just be the rich that have the ability to question in an effective way government action. Sauce for the goose, Mr. Speaker, and it's good for the gander as well.
Representative Crops. Further discussion? Representative Petrillo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As someone who's lost a fair number of these types of cases and had to come forward and ante up with the attorney's fees, I think I have a particular history and background with the reason for this rule. You know, I think you have to ask yourself, how much do you trust the government? If you trust the government implicitly to always do the right thing, then there's really no reason to have this kind of a rule. But this rule is in place because we in Alaska don't completely trust, and we want to see things brought forward, things in the public interest, things that we think are important to us, enforcing our laws sometimes when no one else can be expected to do it. We have a tradition of individualism here, and that's what this rule helps. This bill will not stop environmental cases. There will always be money to bring environmental lawsuits. There will always be a lot of outside and inside money to bring those cases. But this legislation would stop cases like the Alaska Firebird girls' competitive hockey team who brought suit to get equal ice time with boys. It'll stop suits like Sam McDowell's subsistence case, which I don't particularly agree with, but I defend his right to have brought it and to have gotten his ruling. It'll also stop people like Gene and John Douglas, who brought a suit to question whether applying a local sales tax to long-distance calls was constitutionally correct. This bill is killing the messenger. It doesn't solve the problem. We're still going to see the big cases. We're still going to see delays. We're still going to see problems with development. But this legislation is going to impact tax cases, zoning and land use cases, gender discrimination, race discrimination, public records, elections, just to name a few. It has an extremely broad impact. I don't think that's really what's intended. It's an unfortunate idea, and I think we should maintain that philosophy in our courts that we believe that people that come forward for the public good to support our rights when they have little, if any, economic interest in a case should be able to be rewarded or not penalized for doing that. Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one of the other tests that the court must apply and find in the affirmative is that a large class of people would benefit if this case were brought and were found in favor of the plaintiff. Let me repeat that. A large class of people would benefit. So what we're taking away here by removing this is the ability for the court to encourage tests of state government policy that if we didn't have this, if we didn't do that, would potentially benefit a large class of people. So if that test is not met, then public interest litigant status cannot be awarded. So I, you know, and for all the other reasons that were mentioned by the two prior speakers, I think that this is perhaps one of the most significant pieces of legislation. I certainly don't think that it levels the playing field. I think that it severely tilts it away, and it tilts it in the direction of government power over individual Alaskans. And for, you know, for a group of people who have largely campaigned on getting government off our backs, I find it particularly ironic that they would support legislation like this. This is one of the principal tools by which individual citizens can get government off their backs, when government is power is overweening. If without this tool, Mr. Speaker, governmental abuses will probably go unchallenged, because the mechanism to have them addressed just simply won't be there. And further, you know, in many other states have different versions of this, but this takes off the whole class of civil rights litigation. If the state takes an action that affects your civil rights, you cannot appeal that against the executive branch as a public interest litigant. I mean, that's the archetypal kind of case that public interest litigation should be awarded. And we're just taking that whole class of things off. Now, I can understand why you might want to consider some limitations on that, but to take everything out, to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as it were, just is astounding. I think this is extremely dangerous legislation. Urge members to vote against it.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, there's an old TV show. I think it's so old that it's black and white. Lost in Space. One of the characters ran around saying, "Danger, Will Robinson, danger." Well, I'd like to point out a little danger, Mr. Speaker. We have public interest litigants in this very room. There are legislators sitting here at this very moment who are public interest litigants. What I'm referring to is alleged counsel suit against Mr. Babbitt and others. That's public interest litigation. Why? It's a case designed to effectuate strong public policy. Why? If the plaintiff succeeds, will numerous people receive benefits from the lawsuit? Why? Can only a private party have been expected to bring the suit? And finally, is there any economic incentive to bring the suit? Members of this body, in their individual capacity, chose to sue the federal government. Why would we deny Alaskans the right to sue their state? Why would we abridge that right in any way? Not for any fiscal savings. I looked at the fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note. We're not saving any money by doing this. Not because we're the only state in the nation that does it. Other states do it. They call it private attorney general actions. They call it key Tom actions. There's a long historical precedent for allowing, in democracies, individuals to sue their government. Whistleblowers gain protection this way. If you're pro-choice or if you're pro-life, you can sue. It's a way to effectuate public policy. It gives a tool to every David out there who wants to tilt against Goliath. Now, I look at some of the issues that are challenging us right now. The merger. Public interest litigant might be in a position to do something. Mr. Speaker, the sponsor indicated that this concept has been abused. Fundamentally, this concept cannot be abused. This goes to the essence of what a judiciary system is supposed to mean in a democracy. This is the linkage between the individual's right to stand up to his or her government This is an empowering tool. This particular bit of legislation is pernicious because it does damage to the individual's ability to say no to government. And on many occasions, it's difficult to prevail. But, Mr. Speaker, we should not take the sword from those people willing to take it up.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And wrap up, I would remind the body that this does not affect zoning cases or girls' hockey teams or any other of those cases listed, because this only applies to actions or inactions against the executive branch. Civil rights was brought up, and of course that's a federal issue. It does not not affected by this bill. Mr. Speaker, when there was some discussion that there have not been abuses, I would mention just a few cases. The Weiss case, where the public interest litigant status was granted as a prevailing party when only two of 11 issues were considered partial summary judgment. They got $456,000 in attorney's fees. That, to me, is, if not an abuse, it's certainly very close. The Dansereau case, Mr. Speaker, in which case only one of three issues were adjudicated to the prevailing party, as it were, 100% of costs. The Camden Bay 2 issue, Mr. Speaker, where there was an submerged archaeological site, and the Department of Natural Resources delineated this, told the successful bidder they would have to work around that issue. But the Supreme Court held that it was there and it was mentioned, but the public interest litigant got 100% of court costs. And finally, the only other one I want to get into, and not get into litanies of these things, but Mr. Speaker, in the Demarcation Point offshore lease sale, our Department of Natural Resources considered every possible thing they could think of with one exception. This is an offshore lease, Mr. Speaker. They did not adequately address the effect of mosquitoes on the migrating caribou herd. Public interest litigant, 100% of court costs. Now, I'll leave that to the members of the body, whether you think that somewhere in there may be just a little bit of abuse. Mr. Speaker, there has been some good dialogue. Election issues, civil rights issues, I've talked about that being federal. Open meetings laws, public access to information, freedom of information. Those are issues that I certainly would subscribe that this would create a problem for. And, Mr. Speaker, we have made requests to those generally involved in public interest litigation. We've gone to those people and said, hey, help us with some language so that we can exclude those, that we can make this not so abusive that you can't come back as a public interest litigant, because those are probably issues that should be covered. Mr. Speaker, they say, we don't know. We've asked and we get nothing. We've even asked a member of this body just recently, if there's a problem, give us some language. Well, I don't know what to say. So, Mr. Speaker, I say, rather than do nothing, let's get this done, and if there is a problem with any of these issues that probably should be considered as public interest litigation, we can come back and do something about it. There was a concern that we're not saving any money because there was no fiscal note, and Mr. Speaker, we're saving money by not hampering our economic engine, by the mosquito issue, to hold up a lease sale, which subsequently then provides both jobs and resources for this state. We certainly do have an economic problem. That's why we are so well supported by these development groups like the Alliance and Resource Development Council. They all support this legislation because they know how much some of these close to abuse situations have cost them. Millions of dollars, Mr. Speaker, in delay for no real appreciable good, unless you happen to be really a mosquito aficionado. And finally, Mr. Speaker, we talk about the fact that we need this because, after all, there might be something like the McDowell case or something that might be plowed up. And, Mr. Speaker, 49 other states feel that they have a level playing field. Why is it so incumbent upon Alaska to be the only one that has this kind of a doctrine? This does not, and I keep stressing this, does not affect litigation any more than it does in any other state. It just says that the state will not pay for somebody to sue our administration when they have gone through all the hoops and hurdles necessary to have, for example, a lease sale, and then pay for somebody to sue to make sure that we've gone through all the hoops and hurdles of a lease sale. And so with that, Mr. Speaker, I would recommend that the members vote yes, and I would place a call on the House.
A call placed on the House. Order. The House, please come back to order. Mr. Sergeant Arms, the call has been satisfied. Any further discussion of HB 176? Representative Curtillo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to correct something that's been said on the floor, and that is that other places don't have this kind of a rule. What other places don't have is Alaska's rule on attorney's fees, the fundamental rule. But almost all other jurisdictions that I'm aware of have a public interest litigant rule, as well as our Supreme, you know, federal law, and our U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that that's the case. If I might cite very quickly from a state Supreme Court case, one of our seminal cases, Anchorage versus McCabe, 1977 case that speaks to this, just so that it's clear. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Although all jurisdictions other than Alaska have adopted the American rule that each party to a legal dispute is responsible for his own attorney's fees, regardless of the ultimate disposition of the suit, awards of attorney's fees to public interest plaintiffs have long been an exception to that general no-fee rule. The policy behind the award of attorney's fees to private attorneys generals, which is something one of the previous speakers had mentioned, it's another term for this, was first articulated by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1968, and that was a civil rights case which was about prohibiting discrimination in restaurants. So other states, other jurisdictions, federal law does allow this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cotillo. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to extend in response to new argumentation that was brought up in the summary, and that has to do with the issue of having gone to people and asked them for ideas about how to limit this. I was one of those people who was asked that question, and I did take that request seriously. And in considering it, and spending some time talking to some other people about it, including some folks and considering some arguments from the ACLU and other folks like that, having thought about it, I come to the conclusion that there is no way to fix it. That the present, sometimes democracy just has to be a little bit awkward and a little bit slow, and in order to allow everyone's rights to be heard and considered. And yes, it would be more efficient to adopt this law from some people's point of view. But Mr. Speaker, I can't think, I thought about it, and I don't know how to parse that out. I don't know how to make the decision ahead of time. That's why we have the courts. That's why we have a four-part test that the judges have to go through in order to decide whether it meets the standards. We have standards in place. We have judges that make those determinations. For us to try to figure out ahead of time is the classic dilemma. We cannot write legislation and anticipate every single circumstance would make sense. That's why we set standards and allow judges to judge whether a particular case meets those standards. And then I'd just like to remind, they don't get their attorney's fees in every single time they bring a case. It's only when they win. And when do they win? When those four-part things are proven in court. So, Mr. Speaker, and just one other last little thing. We did pass frivolous
lawsuit legislation a while ago. So these cases are non-frivolous, and they meet that four-part test, the most important one in my mind of which is that there's potentially a large benefit or a significant benefit to a large class of individuals. To take that off the table, and the reason why, lawsuits can be brought, but if we're talking about the reason why all other jurisdictions have some provision for this kind of thing is that the experience has been that this is a class of lawsuit that because of the economic disincentives, you need to have some redress to, in fact, level the playing field. And this is the way in which the playing field is in fact, leveled. So for those reasons, Mr. Speaker, I renew my request to members vote no.
Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last two speakers brought up some good points. One question I've been concerned about in this legislation in the sponsor statement, it indicates that this court rule was brought together and put in place by the Supreme Court and not by legislation. The discussion on public attorney generals in other states, that's how they handle this, was that put in place by legislation? Did legislatures agree that that's how they would handle public interest litigants? Our frivolous lawsuit, there was been questions on how courts handle that, how they would accept those. We passed legislation to address that. It seems to me that it would, if we're concerned about our public interest litigant concerns, that maybe we should address it in legislation. That would get the issue out before the people, before the public, and before the legislature to determine how important and how these issues should be addressed in our courts.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't going to engage in debate today, but in his summation, the sponsor here several times indicated and used the word the mosquitoes, three, four times in his summary he did that. Now, caribou are very important to certain cultures, important to the state of Alaska. Believe me, Mr. Speaker, the mosquito problem on the caribou herd can have a great impact. You cannot lose a pint or a quart of blood a day and expect you're going to have a healthy herd and expect that herd is going to produce. These caribou move to certain areas where there is a sea breeze to give them some relief. And they're also, at this time of the year, you see them in certain areas where they try to get up on the higher knobs and things to get away from the mosquitoes and the different types of flies that exist, blowflies in particular. But please, in the summary, three times mosquitoes. Mosquitoes can kill you. Mosquitoes can cause a problem with reproduction, and it can drive animals mad as well as human beings. So if that's the argument, the mosquito is a frivolous type of thing, an environmental question on the caribou, I beg to differ. It is extremely important, and that's why that ruling was made and that type of claim comes out.
Thank you, Representative Grusendorf. Further discussion? Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And with all due respect to my friend from District 10, I appreciate what he's trying to accomplish, and I can't say I disagree with some of those goals. My concern surfaces not due to the environmental issues, which are seem to be what's driving House Bill 176, but more of what is the potential impact on human services and the human aspect of this piece of legislation. We've introduced legislation and passed on this body bills that might be of questionable constitutional standing. Under this piece of legislation, will provide a chilling effect on those organizations like the AARP who might engage the state in a lawsuit when their members find out that their longevity bonuses are being prorated without a specific action on behalf of the legislature to go and say 250 is now 225 in statute. that seems to be a part of the door that's being opened under 176 that I'm not hearing a lot of discussion on and is causing me the most grief. There needs to be some action, some ability for the people of the state of Alaska to challenge the actions of this body and to challenge the actions of the executive branch when they feel that a wrong has been implemented. And I think by passing House Bill 176, we're taking away, or we're placing a chilling effect on people's ability to question the actions of this body in the third floor.
Thank you, Representative Bryce. Further discussion of HB 176. Are you ready for the question? The question before the body is, shall HB 176 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
21 yeas, 14 nays.
And so HB 176 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move the court rule changes amending Rules 79 and 82, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure, and Rule 508, Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure.
Question before the House, are the court rule changes as indicated by the Majority Leader? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk?
21 yeas, 14 nays.
So the court rule changes have not passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
There are citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us to unfinished business so as to meet up with likely construed legislation. HB 183 will have an additional referral to the Finance Committee. HB 183. Are there committee representative Brookford?
We have a brief at ease, Mr.
Brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? We are still under unfinished business. Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a House Bill 130, architects, engineers, landscapes, surveyors, and everyone has signed off to waive it out of state affairs, so I move that we move that bill out of state affairs with unanimous.
Could you give us the number?
130, HB 130.
Without objection, HB 130 is waived from state affairs. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 176.
Reconsideration has been given on 176. Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to waive House Bill 162 out of the Judiciary Committee. It's an act dealing with mental health services and programs. I have checked with all the members, and all the members have agreed to waive it.
Without objection, HB 162 is waived from Judiciary. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Whitaker be excused from the call of the House from 1:30 p.m. May 5th until 8 a.m. May 6th.
Without objection, that member will be excused during the times and the date mentioned by the Majority Leader. Any further unfinished business? Committee announcements. Regular announcements. Representative Dyson.
Thank you. May is the permission to, never mind. May is the National Foster Homes Month, and today in Children's Caucus, we're having a program on foster parents and foster homes, and there'll be some presentation there about what we've been working on, the program called Foster a Future and recruiting foster parents. We'll have testimony from six former foster children who are now doing well and thriving in life here. And it's just down the hall, and I think we'll have time for you all to grab a bite on your way, and we'd welcome you all to Children's Caucus today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In finance this afternoon, we will be hearing three bills, House Bill 95, the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund appropriation, which is the appropriation which will fund the operating budget through the remainder of FY99. I'll also be hearing House Bill 85, Teachers' Licenses, Discipline, and Ethics, as well as our favorite House Bill 40, Consolidation Bill, and hopefully take action on that later this afternoon. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, I had originally noticed the fact that we were going to have conference committee on House Bills 50 and 51 this afternoon. We are not going to do that. We're going to be meeting tomorrow instead. At this point in time, in the other body's finance room at 4 o'clock. Tentatively, Mr. Speaker, I'm looking at having Departments of Administration, Fish and Game, Corrections, and Law up at that point in time. But that is subject to the notice this afternoon. We will be putting it up this afternoon, which departments we'll be working on. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You, Representative Mulder. Excuse me. Any other committee announcements? General announcements. Special orders. Mr. Majority Leader, Representative Davies.
Mr. Speaker, permission to speak on fallen leaders.
Without objection.
Thank you. I received word late last night that Harold Gillum has passed away up in Fairbanks. And Harold and I didn't often agree on a lot of things, but Harold was a pioneer in the state of Alaska, was a dedicated public servant, was mayor, served on the city council, ran the municipal utility system for many years up in Fairbanks, was on the assembly. I served a couple of years with him up there. And some people described him as irascible. Some people described him as intractable. But I think he always, in his heart, had the best interest of the city and the borough and the state in mind. I served on many committees with him at the borough level, found him always to be informed and be motivated by his understanding of what the facts were. I think that Alaska's lost a pioneer and a statesman, and I would ask for a moment of silence in his honor.
Members, please rise for a moment of silence. Thank you very much. Brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Any other special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that we stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Cinco de Mayo.
Adios, amigos.